Welcome to the Alt Animation Podcast, a podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. I'm Josh Ryan.
And I'm Robert Orndorff.
This is the second series of our South by Southwest recap. A couple things we forgot to talk about last time.
We didn't forget to talk about them, we
were saving them, yeah. So, Robert Rodriguez, he basically announced that he was doing a really cool thing, and, you know, whether or not you agree with Robert Rodriguez's filmmaking style or his choices, it's really cool. He's starting a thing here in Austin called Quick Draw Animation, or Quick Draw Productions, where he, I guess, bought the rights to the Heavy Metal series.
Heavy Metal.
So, he's gonna start making that, and supposedly a family film that he hasn't really talked about at all, but...
So that's what he does. I mean, he does, like, the adult movie, which is, you know, Heavy Metal, and the family movie.
Yeah, which will probably make him more money than the other one. But the crazy thing about it is that he, you know, in his way of saying, oh, I'm gonna, you know, cut costs and do it the Robert Rodriguez way, do it really cheap. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, we got a new streamlined way to, like, make it really cheap and, like, make it, you know,
affordable.
Cut out
the animation part of it?
Well, yeah, and so basically what he's doing is the main creative group is this Quick Draw Productions based out of Austin, Texas, where it's the Troublemaker Studio guys. It's like seven or eight dudes that kind of control the art direction and the story. And then the rest is going to be farmed out to other production studios.
That's pretty standard.
Well, yeah, but he's saying, like, he knows a new way of, like, doing it that's going to make animation a lot cheaper and faster. So I'm really interested to see how that goes.
He didn't say that was it, did he? He didn't say... You know, keeping the side here and forming. I mean, that's been the way it's done for a long time.
Yeah, that's not how he's going to be saving
money.
That's
not the secret weapon.
Yeah, he has some kind of secret way of animating, supposedly, that no one's ever thought of before.
Okay.
So we'll keep an eye out on that and let you guys know how that goes, because it's very interesting stuff, especially for us living here in Austin.
And also for any Frank Frazetta fans, he's trying to move the Frazetta Museum to Austin.
Yeah,
so that I'd be a fan of.
That should be really cool. I'd be excited to see that. Definitely.
Aren't there multiple Frazetta Museums?
I think so, yeah, or at least it was traveling for a while, and now he wants to make it a permanent home.
Speaking of Frank Frazetta and animation, if you've never seen the movie Fire and Ice... It is, the attempt was to take a Frank Frazetta painting and turn it into a movie. I'm not sure how successful they were. It's not the greatest movie ever, but if you like checking out vintage...
Well, you know that he's going to remake that, right?
Robert
Rodriguez, supposedly, yeah, he has some concept art and everything of what it's going to look like. I don't know if it's on the back burner, because he announced it a while back.
It's gotta be if he's doing Heavy Metal.
Yeah.
To follow Heavy Metal up with Fire and Ice, though, that's interesting.
But there's some old articles you can check out where he released some concept art for it, so it's kind of cool. If he does it, I would love to see it.
Yeah.
So the other thing we didn't mention last time, this time definitely we want to talk about it, because it's really cool. And you haven't seen this yet, have you, Robert? Blah Blah.
Nope, I haven't. You keep some of these things from me on purpose.
The guy's name is Vincent Morissette, and he's from Montreal. They made this really cool interactive animation where it's like an indie animation, you know, where they you have all kinds of crazy, like, clouds, and, like, there's no real narrative.
Okay.
But you have a really compelling character and a really cool design, and you know, it's all interactive, so you gotta try to, it's like almost like a puzzle, you gotta try to figure out what to do next, and there's like 12 levels or so. I can't remember the exact amount.
Is it crowdsourced or something, or is it, it's all just this one group?
Well, I would imagine, it's
like, there's no real narrative or story, is it because different people are working on it at different times? Or
No, it's just, it's more of an interactive experience, like, connecting with this character, and like, there's parts where, depending on when you click and like, what his facial expression is, he reacts to that facial expression, so something bad will happen or something good will happen, and then there's like multiple versions of him that you can like connect together, and then it's really cool and really fun to do, and I highly recommend everyone go to the website. But if you search for Blah Blah, BLA space BLA, Vincent Morissette, and we'll also have this of course on our Facebook page or in our Alt Animation page, but definitely check that out, because it's really cool, man. It's an awesome interactive animation, and it won the
Interactive Award.
It won the South by Interactive Award, and it's, you know, not anything that's like a technical interactive thing. It's a very artistic, independent animation kind of thing. So it's really cool and very groundbreaking in a lot of ways, I think. So check that out, and I guess we'll wrap that up for our South by Southwest kind of recap for this time along.
Okay.
But We also have, of course, another interview with one of the animators from South by Southwest on this particular podcast.
Right.
Miguel Giron, and he's an awesome animator. Did a film called Paint Showers, which I personally responded well to because I do that digital projections. And
yeah,
he kind of does
right.
the same thing with paint and different plates and, you know, kind of compositing them together. So listen for that interview after we finish talking. the other thing...
Just plugging the interview that you merely have to sit and wait for.
Well, so that way at least you know...
Don't quit listening before the interview.
Yeah. It's just to let people know what's going on. Next thing, just kind of want to barely touch on it. It's Cartoon Brew's kind of going on a crusade of studios that are, you know, kind of not treating their artists the best.
That's right.
And they have a Q&A with some people from Sony Pictures Imageworks that's trying to get better, you know, better working conditions there. Guys that are doing the Hotel Transylvania, the Gedi Tartakovsky. I can't say his last name ever. But
Tartakovsky. Even sure I'm saying it right. But.
Yeah. Anyways, you guys know who he is. That movie that they're working on, I guess a lot of the artists just weren't happy with the way that they were treated. And the other thing that they're kind of going on a crusade against is the main guy from Digital Domain, who I guess has been bragging lately about how he's getting students to pay to work on his film. So
you know, that it does leave like a dirty feeling. But I mean, what is the ultimate goal? Are they looking to create a guild, or I mean,
well it. Like
I'm talking specifically about Cartoon Brew. Like, what are they?
Oh, no, I mean, they're just bringing attention to it. Yeah, because that's kind of, especially Ahmed, not Jerry, but Ahmed, he's the guy that, like, you know, he feels like he's a champion.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I definitely think it's cool, and it's great to know about it and for people to bring it up, because it is, especially...
We've talked about it before.
Well, yeah, and especially since we do the alternative side of the animation industry, it's absolutely something that, you know, we need to talk about in terms of, how much do you want to work on a feature-length film? Is it worth it to pay to work on one? I mean, is that better than going to school? Although you do have to go to school to be able to work on the film. But there's a bunch of really well-thought-out comments from people that agree with one side or the other in both of these issues. So just wanted to bring attention to people who haven't seen those things on Cartoon Brew. It's very interesting stuff.
I'm just surprised that there are people who work at these studios who are willing to go on record saying this stuff. I'd be afraid. You know, I mean, and realistically, it is sort of...
Well, I mean, most of them are anonymous people, so...
Really? I thought you were pointing one out that it looked like they had given their name, but maybe I misread it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and just check that out. I just kind of wanted to bring it up since it's something that, you know, something that we usually talk about on the show, but, you know, they do a much better job of us in this particular area of covering it, so... The next thing we want to talk about is Edgar Wright, who is the writer-director of Spaced, of Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, wrote on Tintin, Scott Pilgrim.
That's right.
Awesome guy, really funny dude. If you ever listen to the Doug Loves Movies podcast, Doug Benson's podcast, it's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, they play movie games like movie trivia, and Edgar Wright is always on it, and him and Simon Pegg, and they love it because they're both movie nerds. But Edgar Wright, you can tell that he's a student of cinema and loves it and knows every single bit to know about it.
I was blown away by him on Spaced. Like, just because they didn't have much of a budget, but, you know, just the creative stuff they came up with in changing character perspectives and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, he has a very unique vision and a very distinct vision that he knows exactly what he wants to do because he is a master of his craft, basically.
True.
But he has a really cool new, I guess, interactive comic book / animation called Brandon Generators, brandongenerator.com. And he did it with Microsoft. I guess they sponsored it. Mm. And it's a comic book that you can go and suggest how the story continues and everyone can kind of give feedback to it. So it's a really interesting, unique way to do that. And it was originally written by Edgar Wright, and you can read all about that. He's done a couple interviews about it where he talks about how much...
Now, is he going to continue working on it? I mean, I know that if people are saying, well, we want the story to go this way or that, does he still come in and make that happen? But
I'm sure he guides it, and also, you know, he set a certain tone with the first couple ones that I'm sure, you know, he won't have to have as much of a hand in later.
Right.
But he set the bar high in the initial ones. Well, I guess now I kind of want to talk about a couple of the fans
Okay.
From the Alt Animation podcast that have been extraordinary the past couple weeks.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, man. This guy is Scott Benson, who is an awesome animator. Definitely Google his name. I couldn't find his actual website, but he's got like a Vimeo page of all of his cool stuff.
Scott, if you're listening, tell us where your page is, man.
Well, and also thank you very much because yes. Scott is he's been featured on Motionographer and he's a pretty well known animator. Highly respected in terms of his style, design, and storytelling. And he was nice enough to kind of champion the podcast on Twitter and got us a bunch of followers that are really talented, awesome animators, and it's kind of nerve-wracking to know that they might be listening in on this podcast.
Yeah, this guy freaked out.
Yeah, and I kind of geeked out a little bit at all the people, and I've been Vimeoing everybody and LinkedIn checking, kind of creeping on everybody that's been following us on Twitter, seeing who they are and what they do. And just blown away by the people. So, the other person I want to talk about is Deval Sani, and he does KeyframeGuy.com. He mentioned us, which I really appreciate. His website's really cool, and I highly recommend checking that out. And then, of course, our first super fan, guy who's really cool about sharing, the word of the podcast, kind of believes in what we do, and is down with the cause. Is Andrew Cotthill, and you can check his website out at andrewcotthill.blogspot.com. We mentioned him on the podcast before, but I just wanted to make sure because he still tells everybody about it, and we get followers all the time on Facebook and Twitter, and obviously people that listen to the podcast that are directly from him spreading the word. So thanks again, Andrew. Appreciate it, man. So, all right. Make sure you stay tuned to the podcast or the interview right now from Miguel Giron. He's a really awesome guy. Really cool to talk to, and you can tell he just has a passion for animation and the whole industry in general, and has a really cool story, and kind of a insider information in terms of the school that he goes to and really big California schools and the California side of the animation industry.
The saltier side of the animation education industry.
Exactly, yeah. Nice. So definitely listen to that, and let us know what you guys think. You can always comment on the old Twitter and Facebook and email if you want to do it old school. AltAnimation@gmail.com.
Snail mail. Don't
snail mail us. But definitely feel free to comment on any of the social networking platforms we have and keep on sharing it with people because we do like putting it out and we like to have people listen to it, enjoy it. So stay tuned for the interview and we'll talk to you next time for episode 3 of South by Southwest coverage animation.
My name is Miguel Giron. I am director of Paint Showers, an animated short at South by Southwest.
Have you had a film in any festival before?
I have. Actually, this is the first film that I've applied to festivals, and I've been in a couple festivals before.
Okay.
I was in the it made the world premiere of the Los Angeles 3D movie film festival.
And what was that for?
For my film Paint Showers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I actually shot it, I didn't shoot it, but I post-converted in 3D.
Really?
So, it's been interesting because I've been wanting to show
the red and blue glasses or the actual new technique.
It can be red. We can be red and blue glasses, but it could also be the other version that I'm blanking out on the name. I think Anaglyph.
Yeah.
It could be both. And I first screened it as a 3D film.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, what's the decision behind that? Just because you think it would actually help the film out?
What I wanted to do, the film actually started out as an installation idea.
Okay.
I am in the middle of my MFA at USC for animation.
Okay.
And a big event last year USC wanted to put together was this Visions and Voices event called Rhythm and Visions, which essentially they brought Defuse, which are a bunch of VJs from London, out into Los Angeles to play a live set, where they have visuals and music at the same time.
Yeah.
And the other part of the event was was showcasing a bunch of student 3D work on the actual building walls of the cinema campus.
Oh, wow.
So my idea is that I had the front wall, so you're walking into like the courtyard and you're walking underneath these arches. So my idea is that I wanted to cover the whole cinema school in paint. So I wanted to do like paint showering the whole USC Cinema building.
Very cool,
man. And I wanted to do it in 3D because that was the idea.
Yeah.
So people walking in, you see the paint are just like pouring out of the windows. That idea.
Oh, man, I feel a little cheated now. I want to see that. I want to see the full, you know, your original vision for it.
Yeah, no, it was cool. You know, to be honest, I'm actually a little bit happier with the how the film actually came out more than the installation.
Okay.
With the 3D, I wanted it to be brighter and stuff like that.
I see.
I should have known Maya at that point. I didn't know Maya to like do like precise planning of the paint interacting with the buildings.
Gotcha.
So I'd like to do it again and do it better. But I actually like the film version the best.
Well, it was awesome. I just wanted to let you know that I thought it was great. It was really cool. I think the audience really liked it too. Were you happy with the audience response? I think you could definitely hear some like, oh, cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That was really cool to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, and one of the things that we kind of talked about with some other of the animators here and at other festivals is that unique audience that you get playing it in a festival.
Right.
Really, as an animation, especially an animated short filmmaker, you hardly ever get a chance to play your film. I don't know, maybe you guys do that. I'm guessing you guys probably do that at your school quite often as screenings.
You know, not as often as should happen.
Okay.
That's what's cool about film festivals. And again, you know, this whole experience is new to me. You know, after that, I went to Ottawa, which was a really cool experience.
This year?
Yeah, this...
Oh, okay,
well,
I was
2011.
There. Okay, I might have seen you there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Funny.
Yeah, so... And that experience was really cool because you get to see shorts, which is so hard to see in any context apart from a film festival.
Absolutely.
Especially one that's like really well curated and well put together, like Ottawa, and also here in South by Southwest. I thought Claudette did a really great job bringing like these diverse films, but they all kind of like, the whole program felt kind of unified.
Yeah, me and my co-host Robert were talking about that right after the show. It felt like there was a running theme throughout, and they really worked well together. That was another thing I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel your film benefited or didn't benefit from playing with other shorts?
I think my film definitely benefited. Actually, from the first film that they played, which was it was like a fire animation. I think it was called Combustion.
Which was awesome.
Which was great. Yeah. I mean, all the shorts were really good.
They were.
But I felt like, I was talking afterwards with my friends, I felt like the two writing themes of the animated shorts here at South by Southwest were natural disasters and like some kind of spiritual awakening.
Yeah, water being one of the main natural disasters for a lot of them, yeah.
Exactly. So I felt like my film played right into that because, it's just a shower storm.
Yeah, and liquid and all, you know, that using that that idea of fluidity, I guess. If you want to get nerdy about it and you know, film nerd about it, absolutely. I thought, you know, it was really cool the way that all of them played together, and I can only imagine how it affects the psyche of seeing one after seeing another. And I don't know, do you feel distanced from your film enough to where you can't really see it in the unique way in a festival? Or did the film come off differently to you after watching it after another one?
Yeah. I mean, I would say they're... Yeah, I was just talking about this with my friend. I would say it's not generally a pleasurable experience watching my film at a festival because I'm always... I only see the negative things that I don't like about
Absolutely.
It. Right? So, it's like, I wish I could change that. I wish I was different. And I'm just thinking about, like, the next thing I want to do more than, like, how people are responding or receiving to it.
Okay. Now, do you get any type of indication of what you want to do next by the audience reaction, or is it more or less a... You see what you have done, and you know, you kind of inside yourself, introspectively, have decided to do something different or the same, or
right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's definitely a mix of both a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, it's a good question. I feel like especially after Ottawa this past year, was incredibly inspiring, and so were the shorts this year at South by Southwest. Very inspiring, and it definitely gives you. I mean, for me, it gives me so much fuel for fire. Like that's what I really like about festivals.
Absolutely.
You can see all these amazing shorts that, the internet helps and everything, that you see a lot more things that you really wouldn't see before. But film festivals are awesome because it just gives you so much ideas, you know, inspirations, and just how things are curated together and put in front of each other. Like, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
So, like, for inspiration-wise, that's big. But at the same time, you know, it's hard for me to start with a new project with something that I know, you know, with animation just takes so long to do, you know.
And that's another good thing about festivals is, you, I mean, you're holed up in, you know, a tiny room for hours and hours, weeks and weeks, making something by yourself, and then you get the total dichotomy, like, opposite end of showing it, talking about it, socializing, meeting new people, and getting to meet other people that inspire you. I'm sure it's a relief in a way, you know, like, or at least something different to kind of jog your mind a little bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, when I was doing this film, I was holed up in that little Oxbury room every weekend, essentially, for 6 months. Weekdays when I could sneak in between classes or at night. So having that release of just being at, like, you know, a huge festival like this and talking to people, it's great.
Very cool, man. So what is the exact program that you're doing at your school? Is it experimental, or is it you kind of go your own path? Do you have like a special major that you're doing?
Well, the major is just animation.
Okay.
It's the MFA animation division at USC. It's, you know, the department is pretty diverse, actually. You know, it's led by Kathy Smith, Sheila Sophian, who are very strong independent artists, but at the same time we have like Tom Cito, who, you know, is huge Disney animator legend, you know. So a lot of us, and my class is really diverse as well, so half of us are experimental animators.
Okay.
The other half really, you know, really wants to do go into major studio, you know, animation studios.
Absolutely.
Doing movies or even games.
Which is one of the benefits of going to that school is because it has a reputation.
Exactly.
So a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are, you know, they're students or even from other countries and things, and it's, you know, it's awesome that you get to go to that school, but there's a lot of people that, you know, that would be their dream, you know? And so they kind of look to people like you to say, oh, hey, man, you know, what's going on? So I guess it's a little magical and mysterious to the people who are outside of that whole system.
Right.
I don't know if you kind of can shed a little light on it. I mean, is there a level of, this guy's doing that, so I don't want to do the same thing he's doing, I want to do something different, I got to be unique, or is there any of that going around, or is it more collaborative? What, I don't know, can you kind of give us, like, the inside scoop, the psyche of the students there? I mean, is there a level of competitiveness, since it's already such a competitive school?
I would say there's a level of competitiveness, for sure, but at the same time, I think the program at USC in particular, what they do a lot is try to bring as many diverse students as possible.
Okay.
So, like, I have friends who come from very much of an art background, like myself, and I have other friends who come from, you know, computer engineering, and I have friends who've never really done animation, they've done graphic design. So, you know, there's a sense of competition for sure, I guess, for certain people, but, you know, it's a really nice atmosphere because everybody brings something different to the table, you know. Some people are like really amazing draftsmen, and then some people are, you know, really amazing designers, or some people just, you know, like they can do whatever in Maya, which is what I cannot do.
The genius programmers, the guys that are going to make a ton of money after.
Exactly. The people who can pay off their loans afterwards.
Yes, absolutely.
It's where the psyche goes. Like, it's actually, it's nice because we are so diverse, you know. There's a, you know, sense of competition, you know. It's a small program, so you get to know everybody.
Yeah.
But you know, it's nice because we all hang out. It's a good mix.
So it's what people would imagine, almost, where it's a creative incubator, almost, where people can bounce ideas off of each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is probably why it's so successful.
No, for sure. And it's really nice because we have a new building that's like this crazy, crazy, you know, newfangled technology building.
Really?
Built by George Lucas.
Oh, wow.
Our class was the first class to be in this new building as, like, the first class.
Okay.
And from, like, year one, we're in this new building. And I bring it up because it's nice because we're all together. Like, we have cubicles in our own computers. We're all together. So, like, essentially, late at night, a lot of us are there at the same time. And that does a lot to have everybody, that sense of camaraderie for people together.
I can imagine. And the way the industry is going, I mean, there's no, well, I mean, they're still very pure mediums, but there's so much mix and match now to where, I can't tell if that's an actual live effect, or if that was composited or made in 3D or 2D.
Right.
And people can kind of work together to make a you know, almost a, what's the word, not a collage, but, you know, almost a group effort and make something amazing using different techniques.
Well, exactly. I mean, that actually is a really big, that was a really big, that attracted me to the program, you know, to the program's big benefit. They managed to hold on to a lot of old analog techniques, even though, like, the big push is to make everything digital. You know, we were one of the first class that our first films were digital, and that's the only way I could have made this film, Paint Showers, because I made it's my first year at the program, and you know that film was kind of inspired by the fact that there was this gigantic, beautiful 35 millimeter Oxbury machine in the basement of the building that they managed to at least hold on to the building.
Okay.
But they switched out the camera with a Canon DSLR.
Crazy.
Connected to Dragon, right next to it.
Okay.
So I mean that if you just saw that image alone right there, you know, it's like literally bringing old and new together as one, and that was really the only way I could have made my film, because I shot it using that big Oxbury machine.
Do you have any pictures of you working on that? I would love to see what that looks like.
I think so. Yeah,
you should send me one. We'll post it up on the site.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, for sure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the film, the technique in general. I guess it's Paint Showers. It's a really cool, visually striking movie with lots of colors and paint.
Thank you.
Talk about, I guess, the process a little bit.
So basically the process, I stole / borrowed these friends of mine's...
Most of the best ideas are.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I took their multiplane setup that they built, which is like 4 panes of glass on like moving shelves.
Yeah.
And I just like basically put it underneath the Oxbury machine. And what I would do is that I would record tons of passes of different effects with paint that I would manipulate.
Okay.
For stuff that was like dripping down, I would just take a bunch of glycerin and like tempera paint, mix it together underneath the hot light so it stays liquid.
Uh-huh.
And I would take the glass corners and lift it up like an inch for 2 seconds, put it back down, take a picture, grab the corners again, lift it up, put it back down, take another picture, and
so try to get that like a spread, or what's the purpose of lifting it up?
So that would be like the paint slowly making its way down screen.
Ah, okay.
Like probably toward the later parts of my film.
So you're almost stopping it. You have to stop the action and kind of control it.
Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting.
And then you know, if I want to change the angle, you just have to deal with that. You know.
Okay.
And then make sure there's like a lot of towels at the end so it doesn't drip over everything on the floor. But it was just a lot of different techniques. I would just take a little dab of paint and just bomb it with glycerin, and that would just make it like explode into like these beautiful spiraling patterns. So it was, you know, the technique was just me basically playing around with glycerin and paint underneath the Oxbury.
See, I'm a huge fan of, I guess the word could be improvisational animation, or, you know, not necessarily just letting the elements do whatever they want, but having that natural organic movement and you kind of control it and guide it to where you want. I'm a huge fan of that kind of stuff. That's why I really like your film.
Oh, awesome.
You know, there's a certain level of, yeah, everything's perfectly controlled and created, you know, in a 3D program. Yes, I can see the artistic talent there, absolutely.
Right.
But there is that guttural, visceral kind of feeling of using real elements and things like that that make it just so, so interesting to watch. And
yeah,
people, I think, feel connected to it in a different way than they would, because they can kind of see how it was done, but the magic is that they're not entirely sure. So
yeah,
it's like you get a hint of it and it really gets people's minds going, as opposed to like a 3D film where they have no idea how it was made at all. And it's just kind of like, who knows, you know? That's I get the characters, but they're not really clued in.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Have you got any responses like that from people?
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me about how like the structure of the film was, and I mean, what you said definitely rings true to me as well. You know, it was a lot of it was improvised, you know, being underneath the table. At the same time, you can see, like, the scratches of the glass there, you know.
Yeah,
so, you know, it was a really, I like that organic, like, textural quality, but also, like, I was making up as it was going along. And again, with the idea of, like, old technology, new technology, the way I structured it could not have been done if I shot it through film, because at the end I had all these elements, and then it was me with After Effects trying to figure out what, how to put it all together.
That's going to be my next question. So you have all of these shots, right, with all these really cool looking effects, or right. looking, you know, paint drips and things. What was your process pulling that out? Because usually in animation, you're editing very little because you're using as much as you possibly can. You know,
right.
there's not a lot on the cutting room floor. I would imagine with yours, you probably had a million different effects that could have been used, but you didn't.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. You know, some of the effects I use fit more appropriately for the installation that okay. happened last year at USC. But a lot of it I just couldn't use, and it was a shame because I really liked, you know, the colors in this one pass.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately had to make sense altogether as just one piece.
Did you have a method for that? Or was it just trial and error, seeing what works and what doesn't?
It just trial and error. You know, like, once you've lived with this footage for long enough, like, you yeah. know, kind of, like, they're like your little children. He's like, all right, this one can go first, this one can go after that. You,
you know,
know
exactly what bin it's in and everything, yeah, in the After Effects.
Right,
yeah.
exactly. So it's a lot of footage, but, you know, it actually took, like, maybe 3 weeks to finally find something that I was, you know, a structure that I liked
okay.
with it, because that's the trick with making something abstract, you know, like, you just gotta make the structure make sense however it would make sense.
Yeah. So okay, let's talk about that a little bit. Abstract animation, it's something that is kind of, I wouldn't say taboo, but there's some people that are just like, ah, whatever, abstract animation, and some
yeah.
people who just love it.
Right.
And where is the line of, I want to connect with an audience and tell, or, you know, get a message across, or you want them to kind of create their own message? I'm sure there's a fine line there that, you know, you don't want to cross one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your thought process with that?
I mean, it's tricky. You know, I'm definitely one of those people who loves abstract animation. You know, I come from more of a fine arts background. You know, I double majored in film and studio art at okay. Northwestern, and then I was in New York for 4 years doing art assisting.
Okay.
And so I'm come from more fine arts background. So for me, like, just seeing, like, oh, it's a moving painting. Like, how is that not awesome? You know?
Yeah.
So I'm definitely one of those people, but at the same time, you know, I really have a big love for narrative filmmaking, and, you know, I like storyboarding a lot. You know, I like that a lot. So, I don't know, for me, it's always kind of a tricky balance. You know, sometimes I have to be like, choose whether, all right, this is going to be an artsy-fartsy film, or this is going to be more of, like, you know, quote-unquote crowd-pleaser, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, something that that has a definite story with characters.
Gotcha.
And I love both of them, but part of the idea that I wanted to go to grad school is to kind of figure out a way those would work together somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you did a good job, too, because there is definitely an emotional arc in Paint Showers that you can pick up on.
Thank
you. But there's not too much there that's like, I'm trying to, you know, tell you something in particular. Here's my message, and it's not preachy, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, thank you. That means yeah. a lot. It really does.
I enjoyed it thoroughly, man. One of the reasons why I liked it so much is I get to do live projection animations, which I think I talked to you about a little
right.
bit. Have you ever got to try that at all?
No, I haven't, but I would love to. I think that stuff is really cool. You
really should, man. The cool part about it is, and I'm sure you'll appreciate it being an animator, is that it's different every time. It's live, so if you make a mistake, it's a big deal.
Big deal.
It's happening as it's happening.
And you move on, and the sense of improv, you know, improvisation.
Exactly.
It's just so hard to fit that idea into the world of animation, because animation, you have to plan everything out, you know?
Yeah.
Just like
yeah.
bit detail by detail. So however you can get improv into animation, I'm like all for it.
Well, I mean, a lot of the techniques you're talking about, using glycerin and things like that, you know, are the kind of the same deal. So I mean you should try it out. I think you'd have a blast, and
yeah.
you're probably going to be a master at it already since you've been doing it on a larger scale. But I was going to ask you, since, you know, you're obviously inspired by, you know, live projection and VJs to, well, the school program is kind of inspired
right.
by the VJ or that one art show. One of the first, I guess, the guy that's considered the godfather of VJing is the, I can't remember his last name, but he has the Joshua Light Show. Have you seen any of his stuff at all?
Joshua, no, I don't think so.
He started back in the 60s with, you know, Janis Joplin and, you know, all the hippie summer love
people. Oh, of course,
people.
Yeah.
And he would project live ink and paint and stuff mixing together.
Cool.
Yeah, for bands. And there's something that's kind of coming back now.
Right.
And and a lot of people are doing it, and especially one of the, I think is awesome, is projecting on buildings like what you're talking about doing.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know, how often do you follow that kind of stuff? Do you, I mean, I try to as much as possible, but I'm not really, I don't know that much about it.
Right. I don't really know the music aspect of that world, you know, like the VJing, that kind of stuff. I don't know it so well, especially for that kind of stuff. Like, I know the aesthetic, you know, Monterey Pop is one of my favorite, you know, documentary film movies, and, you know, I remember Jefferson Airplane having, like, these crazy visuals behind them as, you know, that film goes on, and I love that stuff, but that specific world of, you know, live music projection, I don't know too much about, actually.
But as in terms of, like, well, I guess in general, live projection of animation, it seems like it's kind of getting a new life, and a lot of it is,
for sure,
you know, with the projecting on buildings, and, you know, a lot of buildings are kind of using that to promote and things like that, or even promotions for any other type of commercial art. But there's a lot of really cool, unique projections, live projections, and I think it's kind of getting a new life that, you know, not a whole lot of people have noticed, or it's been missing for a while. It was really big, you know, back in the 60s, and now it's kind of catching back on again. It's really exciting.
Absolutely, and I think with the technology that's happening now, you know, as projectors get more smaller and more powerful, you know, that stuff is becoming, it's definitely breathing new life into that. You know, in Los Angeles in particular, I think it's an exciting city for that to happen, you know, because, I don't know, there's so many, like, wide open, like, bizarre spaces that are just, like, they're not, like, nothing or nowhere in the middle of nowhere, but, like, it's just a gigantic city to play with, you know?
So what is the animation community there that isn't necessarily talked about that much? Like, is there an underground kind of punk animation scene there where people are kind of showing crazy stuff nobody knows about?
I don't know. I hope so.
Yeah, it'd be nice to think about.
It'd be nice to think about, you know?
A group of underground sewer people that, animation.
Exactly, with, like, stolen rogue projectors running around down town, place to place.
Avant-garde.
Yeah. You know, I think there definitely is. I moved to Los Angeles only a year and a half ago. Okay. So I can't even, like, you know, I'm not even sure if I can deliver an authoritative opinion on that.
I'm sure they keep you really busy too, where you don't get a whole lot of opportunity to go out and check things out like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, like, there's an awesome animation community in Los Angeles, you know, just of USC, you know, CalArts, you know, all those programs. And, you know, my friends, I am lucky to have good friends who try to facilitate a lot of interaction between, you know, the schools, like, you know, the graduate students.
Okay, so between the different schools.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I have a friend, I have a couple friends who, there's an organization called LIE, that basically is made of a bunch of CalArts MFA students and alumni,
cool,
as well as USC, and we put on different screenings a lot.
I bet that's like a dream team almost, of people getting together and kind of sharing ideas and things. That's awesome.
It's cool because, you know, I think there's things that only benefit from that, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's cool, and that's just very new. You know, we just started that. I think a couple of them went down to Columbia a couple months ago, screened a bunch of, you know, of our films there too, so that was really cool.
Well, that's exciting. I might have to get in touch with them and see if I can figure out a way to have your guys' stuff play here in Austin sometime.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah,
you absolutely should.
That would be an awesome idea. I would love to see it. I'm sure lots of people in town would too.
Yeah, yeah, for
sure. Well, very cool, man. So, all right, what's your, do you have a plan for your next one, or are you just kind of shooting ideas around?
Kind of kind of an idea for my next one. You know, I'm in the middle of my program, so I have to start thinking about my thesis now.
Okay.
And
how early do they get you guys working on that?
Well, pretty early, like right around the 50% mark. You know, we have a pre-thesis class, and then our last year is just all thesis.
Okay.
So I'm in the middle of my pre-thesis class, and still figuring it out. It's kind of hard.
Is there a lot of pressure to kind of like make your film?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do, you know, the professor who runs that is Christine Panushka, who's amazing, amazing filmmaker, and she, you know, her class is really good and everything, but there's pressure, you know, like, I want to do something that's really, you know, I have a whole year to do a film, so I want to make sure, you know, that the opportunity doesn't come very often, so.
Absolutely. And, you know, once you're out of school, there is a certain level of commitment and dedication that you know, obviously every animator has inside of them, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it in the first place.
Right.
But you know, that structure of school really, and you know, the avenue to make whatever you want that's yours. You don't really, like you said, you don't really get that afterwards. I'm not trying right. to, I'm not trying to scare you or anything, but
I know, of course. I mean, of course you think about these things.
Yeah.
And it's almost a sense of too much freedom, you know, when there's not a limitation. Yeah. Like, for me, I kind of like the limitation. Like, I like that this film came out of the limitation, like, all right, this is an installation. I just want to do paint, like, dripping all over the place.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and, you know, then just figure it out from there. Like, I like that that aspect about it. But now I'm starting for, you know, from a wide open sphere, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, so it's good and it's also bad in a certain sense. Yeah.
Well, this is mainly for me. We don't have to put this on there, but
yeah.
I was just curious. You guys all met up at the filmmaker party afterwards, right? Did they have like a special one for animators only? Did you guys all get together and chat?
Well, they had like a yesterday. We had like a little cocktail reception, 5 to 7 of the short filmmakers.
Okay.
So that was cool. You know, talk and like meet other people and meet other animators. So that was really cool.
Are you like asking for any advice or trying to get any hints as to I don't know, tricks or anything like that on how to get like freelance work, or not freelance work, but
right
there's just some people that I had talked to that have figured out magically some way to market their shorts and actually sell them and not, you know, not sacrifice any type of quality or
right.
you know, attaching any type of like, you know, company name on it or anything.
Yeah,
like
absolutely
that.
No tips of the trade, I think. We're really well, you know, I was asking advice for different things, you know, like distribution, that kind of stuff. You know, people have experience with that company and that kind of business.
And stuff is changing so fast, you know, it's hard to really put a finger on it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, freelance work, you know, it's... With a film like mine that's abstract, it's interesting because I wonder myself, like, what kind of freelance work that could get, you know, because, you know, certain films are just much more better showcases for work that you can contract and hire out, you know, so it's an interesting experience for me. I'm finding, like, being a film festival with a little short film that is abstract and experimental, I guess, because, you know, this is a really great venue for to show that kind of work, because it's not often you can see that kind of work. But at the same time, like, you know, what kind of work do you get up? Like, the practical use of a film like that, you know, is interesting to think about, because it's very clear and it's not very, you know, explicit, but it's exciting at the same time.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not traditionally what a, you know, what somebody would necessarily want for their company, but nowadays with, you know, social media and, you know, almost a... People are going back to genuine, you know, they like that connection with people.
Right.
And people are, especially now, wanting to use those types of things to market. And they kind of want to buy you as a brand and not buying animation as a brand.
Exactly.
Which is really unique. And, you know, I guess my next question is, how do you market yourself? You know, like, do you try to, like, come off as, oh, you know... I'm just doing what I do, it's no big deal? Or do you actually go out and say, hey, you know, I'm marketing myself as this type of person? Do you need to sell yourself at all?
That's a really good question. It's something that actually I've struggled with, because I, you know, I lived in New York for 4 years before here, and I was doing mainly artist assisting for this painter, Takashi Murakami. And he is such a... He's such a businessman, you know, like he's like bringing, remember in the studio, bringing like gallerists, big people all the time. So that made a big impression to me, like that level of just like hustling, and also living in New York City, if you want to work as an artist, you just kind of, you do have to put yourself out there.
Yeah, there's a little give and take, but you try to make sure that there's more take than give in a way with your artistic expression.
Absolutely. You know, like, you want to put yourself out there, and how do you put yourself out there? You know, you're really buying, I feel most of the time, like, the sensibility behind the work rather than just specific work, like you're saying, like the personality or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's been hard because, you know, I have two websites right now, which is kind of like my drawings and paintings.
Tell them.
www.miguelgiron.com,
I'll have your name spelled out on there. Yeah,
right.
You said it earlier.
And then, like, I have another website, www.mibaji.com, which is more of, like, my illustrations for that I've done for magazines and websites, as well as my animation work.
Okay.
And I've had those two websites linked together in the past, But, you know, it's just so much work at that point, you know, like, I feel like if you have a certain body of work, it helps to just edit, you know, to make it, like, a clear, concise statement.
Okay.
You know, so people know exactly, when they look at the work, they know exactly what they're looking at, or get a sense of it, you know?
Certainly, yeah.
And for me, it's been a really difficult challenge because, like, you know, I like the artsy-fartsy stuff, but also, like, you know, like, the commercial aspect, you know? Like,
yeah, and you really can't, you know, if you want to pitch yourself as one or the other, depending on who you might be working for,
right,
or whatever possibility might come up, you know, you kind of don't want them to see it, that other side, because you want it to be concise.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It might be a good idea to have two different websites like that are totally separate from each other, to kind of have two different personality, or not personalities, but artistic personas.
Artistic personas, I guess, is a good way to put it. You know, because
crazy.
It's just different bodies of work. You know, they are related in a certain sense, but you know, I think if you're starting out, you know, as just like a young artist and you're trying to get like attention, I think it helps you to focus and like just make these bodies of work concise and tight but separate.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. I'm struggling with that myself right now, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you still got a couple years to figure all that out, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So are you kind of just going with the flow right now and enjoying it and having a blast, or are you, like, thinking about what am I going to do? I know you kind of mentioned it a little bit, like, thinking about what your future might be, but what do you think the possibilities for you are? I mean, things are changing so fast, it's hard to
Oh, no. God, it's overwhelming. I prefer not to think about
it. It's better just to go with the flow and enjoy the process.
Yeah, enjoy the process, you know? Like, for me to make something new, like, I kind of have to be totally 100% mentally, like, in that project, you know? Like, I much prefer making something rather than thinking the implications of where that brings me, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I just said at the same time, you know, you kind of have to hustle and, like, do that thing. Think about your work externally, you know, like an audience. You know, I much prefer just having my head in my next project.
I guess the trick would be to have almost two different personalities where while you're working, be the artist, and then when you're done with your project, be the salesman.
Right, and when you have to be both at the same time, that is, it gets stressful.
Yeah, I guess that's why a lot of people have agents or ad agencies that they work with.
Right.
Kind of do that for them.
Next level.
Well, I think you're going about it the right way, absolutely. I mean, you know, you definitely don't want to get bogged down with the possibilities, or not even possibilities, but like all this extra stuff, because if you don't have an awesome, unique, genuine product that you're trying to quote-unquote sell,
right,
then you're not even going to get to that point anyway. So the real trick is to have something amazing and, you know, that is a real expression of yourself or what you're trying to say,
right,
before you even worry about that stuff.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Well, now you got, at least you got this under your belt, and then hopefully we'll see the next South by Southwest and more in the future, man.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I
hope so too.
Anything else you wanted to let anybody know? You can't watch Paint Showers yet online, can you?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
But it will be online pretty soon, actually.
Okay, but you have other stuff that people can go check out in terms of your animations that you've been working on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
www.mibaji.com has a trailer of Paint Showers right now. It's spelled M-I-B-A-J-I.
Okay.
I said that pretty fast. Has a trailer of my work right now, but it's going to be online soon. Hopefully distributed by this one company. So hopefully that'll work out soon.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, it was great talking to you, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Good luck in the, I guess, how do they do this? Do they actually have, like, they have winners, right? Like first, second, third kind of deal?
Yeah, they will have winners.
But who cares about that,
I don't really care about that. It's just like the experience of being here alone and getting to participate as a filmmaker, like, that's awesome.
Oh, man, it just, you know, I guess it's kind of a shallow way to think about it, but all the people that applied, all the amazing films that applied and didn't get in, you know, I bet that's already pretty cool. You know, I won't make you say that, since it might make you look like a jerk, but I can imagine how cool that might be. Yeah, it's
well,
kind of beat everyone else.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying it. But yeah, no, it's a great experience. It's very cool.
Well, awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.